Hello there. You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio. Time for more of the Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, on TalkZone.com.
We're talking with our guest, Dr. Robert B. Hill, author of The Strengths of the Black Families, and Dr. Ivory Tolson, author of Breaking Barriers, Plotting to Path to Academic Success. We want to continue this discussion about strengths. It seems to me that what we have been doing with our violence-free zone, and both of you have now had an opportunity to meet some of our young people. We've had the Center for Neighborhood Enterprises brought together in about a week or so ago, about 20 teenagers that were super predators at one point, and they were brought together for a day from around the country to share with one another and to the public their journey from predator to ambassador of peace. And what is it that, and both of you were there, what is it that you as scholars and people who evaluate human behavioral phenomena, what is it that you came away from this this session with?
It was a very powerful convening for me. In fact, I told the staff at Congressional Black Caucus Foundation about it afterwards. One of the things that really struck me was that you had kids who had been there for varying lengths of time. And you can clearly see the ones who had been in it for a while versus the ones who had been in it for less than a year. And what you saw was this natural progression of progress, you know, towards peace. And one of the other things that struck me is the ones that had only been in it for a year, they was obviously still rough around the edges. You know, some of them still had their pants hanging down and they weren't quite there yet, but you can see the ones that have been in there for a while. I mean, shirts tucked in, you know, better spoken, but even the ones that have been in there for less than a year and still was rough around the edges, they were still receiving so much positive affirmation, so much love for what they were doing. And that's very important. A lot of times we can be very judgmental of these kids and we don't look within them. We look at the outside. And a lot of times when I go to different presentations, people will talk about, you know, kids walking around with their pants hanging down and how do you get them to pick their pants up. And what I would always tell them is give them a reason to pick their pants up. Because the kids that I've worked with, I've worked with kids before from that same community, and two different groups of kids I've worked with, I said, you know, we're going to start a business. One time it was a photography business. The other time it was a car wash business. But I would tell them, during your business meeting, you have to wear a tie. A lot of them didn't even own a tie, so I would go into my closet or go to a thrift shop.
Or know how to tie it.
Yeah, or know how to tie it. But they would wear that tie, and we would go out in public after our business meeting, and they would get the positive affirmations about that. But it's never been hard for me to get them to pick their pants up because I gave them a reason to. You know, a lot of people just say, you need to pick your pants up. Well, they pick their pants up, and you don't give them a reason to, and they're walking in the same community, they can get beat up just by having their pants down. So that just shows how naive a lot of people are, you know, to the issues. But, you know, you all really, really have this thing down.
Well, yeah, I found that very moving. One thing immediately came clear is that the violence-free zone are not creaming young people. I mean, these kids, truancy and jail, I mean, you talk about super, super, they had all the negatives. There are people that most people would give up on. There's nothing that can be done to salvage this group. Forget about them. Start on a new generation. You did not. And to me, their stories of how they were transformed. I mean, these were some rough, cold, hard, and they were transformed. They talked about the youth advisors who they could contact 24/7 after a party on the weekends. I have not heard any mentors who are available after parties and on weekends. But your approach, but the main thing to me of your approach, what you have consistently done, is that you believe that there's a seed of resilience in every one of these young people. Somebody interacts with them who believes in them. And they say, oh, you believe in me? Then I'm going to start believing in myself. And then they start talking about it. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, I think all of that should be on all over this country, 60 Minutes all over. They should be talking about this. I mean, this is miraculous, and this is an achievement. And you're doing this in schools across this country. I just think that their story should be heard all over the place, because this is clearly, you say, what works and what why? Well, we do know what works, and we know what's why. Mm-hmm. Having people from, many of them not credentialed people, who are interacting with them, who are inspiring them, and who are transforming them.
Yeah, and this really contrasts with traditional mentoring programs. I know America's Promise, Boys and Girls Clubs, Big Sisters, Big Brothers, a lot of the Wilson Goods program in Philadelphia, the Machi program that says what these kids need is a caring adult in their life. And a lot of these programs get millions of dollars, and they recruit adults outside to spend an hour a week mm-hmm. with these children. And when I look at who would be helped by that, I think my child may be helped by it. Mm-hmm. But the kids who are most at risk living in those communities, they require something more than some adult who comes to them after the 18th hole. Mm-hmm. What they need, I call it transactional mentoring. Mm-hmm. They need somebody in the same cultural and geographic zip code that they can call 24/7. They have their cell phone numbers. Mm-hmm. I posed this to one Chicago official at that meeting, Ivory, when we were there. I said, the real test is it's 3 o'clock on a Friday, and at 3 o'clock, and a child's getting ready to leave school, and he calls a mentor and says, five members of the Gangster Disciples are waiting four blocks from me as I enter. What can I do? Can you help me? Or I've gotten home at 6, and all of the family's furniture and personal belongings are in the streets because we've been evicted. Mm-hmm. A young woman got home 8 after a social event, and mother kept her locked outside because she was inside with a man earning her keep. Mm. She was a prostitute. All three kids were able to pick up the phone and call youth advisors who came immediately to rescue them. Mm-hmm. And one of the programs in Richmond, The Rock, says what the kids also didn't need to know, that a lot of time their initial behavior is to resist anger, because they believe that adults will not stay involved with them. Mm-hmm. So The Rock, one of our programs in Richmond, sends out buses, school buses, on Saturday mornings to about 15 public housing projects some years ago, and told the drivers to sit there. The first Saturday, only two kids got on the bus to come to their facility. Mm-hmm. But next week, every week, they just went back mm-hmm. and sat there. And the kids were waiting for them to say, oh, no one cares. But after a while, now every Saturday, the buses are packed. And so they may get 1,000 kids every Saturday coming to their facility mm-hmm. Where for recreation and social interchange, and they feed them and all. It's only people indigenous to these communities who understand the dynamic and needs of the kids, because they needed, they're providing to the kids what they needed someone to provide to them.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what distinguishes a mentor, traditional mentor, from a transactional mentor. But the challenge that we have is to evaluate, and that's what we have to make our case, mm-hmm. is to, and we are evaluating it.
Right.
And that's why the school piece is so important. Mm-hmm. But it's these strengths that we have to always compare ourselves with what others are doing mm-hmm. traditionally.
Right.
And the question is, how do we overcome some of these barriers? Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
Yeah. Well, one important thing that you said that at that meeting was that you all look at the natural resources in their community, the antibodies, and you distinguish, you said a good program started without money, and they'll be around even if money dries up. They're not the ones just chasing the RFPs. And that's exactly right. Looking for the ones that really have their heart into it and finding ways to resource that. A lot of times we throw all this money at agencies that are just in it for the money, and they're in it to keep people employed, but they don't have the kind of heart and passion or even understanding to do it. So I think that's very important.
I think, again, your approach that you're taking, especially I like the fact that you, the people that you have, certainly your youth advisors, people, your zip code tests, that people who come from the same zip code as the people who are in trouble. I mean, that's radical thinking to me. Because, again, when you talk about low-income communities, they have no people there who can help other people. And that when you look at them, they not only have the same zip code, they have some of the same experiences. You know, I mean, that is radical. That, and, but I think that needs to be taken into account. And so I think that, again, having those people to be more transactional types of mentors who themselves have been transformed can also are now able to transform others. And so that, in effect, you have it in such a way that you can help all, many of these low-income people to help achieve against overwhelming odds.
Now, one of the things that the Bill Gates Foundation just announced that they're going to spend, I think, $40 million on, again, education. And one of the things that they're going to be spending doing research on, what constitutes effective teaching? Well, the question that I have, and I ask you as researchers, how can you assess effective teaching if the environment in which teaching is taking place is dangerous and hostile?
Right.
Isn't it possible that some teachers who may be competent but not good teachers, but not good disciplinarians, wouldn't fare too well, and some people who are good disciplinarians but poor teachers?
Right. Yeah.
How do you measure effectiveness or even define effectiveness in an environment like this?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I talk about that a lot in the Breaking Barriers report and some of my follow-up research, where the dots that I connect is what the black males report that they need in their teachers to do well in school, and what they're also reporting about the environment that they're in. And we also see that link between the students feeling safe at school and their academic performance. I would like to see that same survey done on the teachers and see how safe they feel going to work and how that might impact their performance, because I think that it does. I think one of the things that we really need to do is to look at feelings of safety among teachers and see how that's affecting their work and see how we can heighten their security so that they can give back the love and care that they need to their students.
I think, though, the approach that you're taking is before you talk about even assessing the teachers, and I guess this is what Dr. Tulsa is doing, you're trying to transform the school, the climate of the school. So then, and also the other thing is that there are what we call precursors to learning. Before you look at their academic, you first have to get them to pay attention, to behave in school. And most of your efforts is to get those precursors, to get them ready and get the climate of the school ready and getting them, and then you can talk about the content and their achievement. But I think that we leave out those precursors, the behavior, those things that doesn't come from these professional teachers, but other ways of being able to change the climate of the school so that it becomes a learning culture, a learning climate.
You said something when we were talking before the show, you said something about, yes, there needs to be longitudinal studies, but not necessarily of the kids, but of the institution. We have Madison High, who's been in the voluntary zone program like 9 years in Dallas, Texas. Madison was among the most dangerous schools of Dallas's 93 schools because it had five gangs servicing the school. But we first introduced the voluntary zone into Madison by a young man who started the Crips and the Blood, and one who started the Bloods. But they were brought together by Omar Jawa, the director of the voluntary zone. And so they came together as one, and they took this relationship into Madison and hired young adults to serve as our first youth advisors. And within a year, you saw a dramatic incidence of improvement in the school. And the voluntary zone has been in the school 9 years. Now we only need two youth advisors because the whole culture of the school, Madison now is one of the safest and best performing schools. Because over the course of years, children who are cycling through became imbued with peace, and they began to teach others peace. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion, and our guests today have been Dr. Robert B. Hill, author of The Strengths of Black Families, and Dr. Ivory Tolson, author of Breaking Barriers, Plotting the Path to Academic Success for School-Age African-American Males. I'm Bob Woodson, president of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise. Please join us next week at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to listen to the show. And to, if you want to listen to it and access past shows, go to www.cneonline.org. That's www.cneonline.org, and click on the radio icon. And if you'd like to comment on the show or send us story ideas, please email me at bwoodson@cneonline.org. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you will be with us each week on The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why.
You've been listening to The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, insights and solutions to some of America's most troubling societal problems, featuring community activist Robert L. Woodson Sr. To learn more, visit cneonline.org. And join us next time for more of The Bob Woodson Show, right here on TalkZone.com.